What I would like to do is to speak now about what is surely a historic event, namely closing the 15th century and just before the rise of Protestantism, there was, as we know, the discovery of the New World. I have only one copy in my possession. I will read from and comment on what I have here. You are welcome to other copies. I have only this one in my possession. The subject is the Blessed Virgin Mary and the Catholic Discovery of America. We might begin by observing that it's at least a bit strange to associate Our Lady with the discovery of the New World. What makes it strange is that the discovery of the New World for most people is not associated with anything religious. Quite the contrary. Columbus himself was in search of more land, more power, and more money. And during the year of 1992, I believe I bought all the standard books on Columbus in print. With almost no exception, one book on the quincentennial after another spoke of Columbus as an ambitious man who wanted to have his name remembered in the annals of history. As a consequence, most of the English-speaking world does not know that the dominant motive of Columbus for sailing across the Atlantic to discover what he thought would be the Indies, his dominant motive was not political or financial or psychological. It was deeply religious. I thought I'd bring with me, and I thought, better not. There is what is called the prophecies of Columbus. Columbus was a very prayerful man, especially devoted to Our Lady. He had read the Old Testament and the New Testament. He believed, of course, that God had become man in the person of Jesus Christ. He believed because he couldn't prove it. He believed that most of the human race had not yet been taught about Christ. And he sincerely believed that he was chosen by God to open up the most expansive mission field in the history of Christianity, which he did. In some 10 years, not long after Columbus died, thanks to Our Lady of Guadalupe, in less than 10 years, over 10 million Aztec Indians became fervent Catholics. Remember, he tried to have his own native country of Italy to back his expedition. Did not succeed. He tried Portugal. Did not succeed. He tried Spain, and King Ferdinand thought Columbus was a wild dreamer. Except for Queen Isabella, there would have been no Columbus. But no. If there was one thing that stood out in the Catholic Spain of Columbus's day, it was a people's great devotion to the Blessed Virgin. How so? And I made sure that you all had a chance to find out when Muhammad began to propagate Islam. Who knows? Don't look at your key. In what century did Muhammad begin to propagate Islam?
Seventh
century. Would anybody, again without looking, remember the year?
610.
A little later.
653.
Too late. <laughs> 622, from which date all Muslims in the world date their calendar. To the Muslims, we Christians are idolaters. And they are to try to convert us from our idolatry, the Muslims. They don't succeed. They are to, well, enslave us. If we resist, they are to dispatch us into eternity. And of course, it is true, we believe that Jesus, the Son of Mary, is the Son of God. For the Muslim to claim that Isa, that's the Arabic name for Jesus, is the Ibn Allah, the Son of Allah, is blasphemy. And that is why most of the martyrs, millions, most of the martyrs of Christianity for now almost 1400 years are the victims of Islam. I hope I'm being taped. Millions. As we know, the Muslims took over Spain. For almost 8 centuries, the Muslims controlled Spain. Finally, who remembers the date? The date that Spain was finally delivered from the tyranny of Islam.
1491.
The discovery of America is not coincidentally 1492, with profound implications. Therefore, in 1491, the Catholic Spain was liberated from Muslim tyranny. The liberation meant freedom once more to proclaim Mary's divine maternity without fear of Islamic opposition for professing idolatry. I do a lot of flying necessarily, and normally the longer the flight, the more sure I am. I do not get into conversation, but am able to do my work. But some time ago, I made an exception. I was flying and I teamed away from Chicago to Albuquerque. Across the aisle from me was a woman from Iran. She spoke pretty good English. She had never talked to a Catholic priest in her life. I knew a lot about Islam and the Quran. And she was just so thrilled that I knew so much about the Quran. And I asked her, who did she think that Miriam was married? Oh, she was the mother of Esau. And who is Esau? Oh, he's a great prophet. Is that all? Well, that's all that our Quran tells us. So then I spent over 2 hours, and I think I convinced her that Jesus is the Son of Allah. And I've since been corresponding with her, me in Detroit, she in Iran. Columbus then himself was very devoted to Our Lady. He wrote more than most people realize, and his published writings show a childlike dependence on Mary. She was regularly invoked in his prayers. His flagship in crossing the Atlantic was what else? The Santa Maria. And one of the first islands he discovered, he named Concepcion, in honor of Our Lady's Immaculate Conception, a few centuries before the definition. However, that's not the main focus, what I want to share with you. Honestly, I thought I'd find more copies to give each one of you. I could find only one. Change one word in the title, and we have our focus for this lecture. I wish to speak to you about the Blessed Virgin Mary and the Catholic evangelization of America. And the massive multi-million conversion of the New World to not just Christianity, but to Catholic Christianity is what we should ambition in our day. It has to be a miracle, of course. Who's going to work it? Our Lady. It was the apparitions of Our Lady to Juan Diego, himself the converted Aztec Indian, and the revelations at Guadalupe that opened the greatest missionary expansion of the gospel since apostolic times. There has never been such a massive, far-reaching, and stable missionary conversion in the history of the church as there was in the early 16th century because of one man's deep faith in Our Lady as the Mother of God. There are a few years intervening between 1492 and 1531. What happened in 1531? 31.
Apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe.
So, when Columbus crossed the Atlantic, he reached only the outskirts of the Western Hemisphere. He touched on one island after another, but that's it. One island after another in the Central American continent. By the beginning of the 1500s, Mexico was discovered. Columbus had already passed to his eternal reward and was followed by one Spanish-speaking governor general after another. But one of these Spaniards after another was no Columbus. They were men, ambitious, greedy, and some mercilessly cruel. One name stands out. Cortes was a Spanish general whose military exploits in Mexico rank him with Caesar and Napoleon in his physical conquest of Mexico. As warlike as Cortes was, he was himself a believing Christian. In the tradition of his ancestors, remember, the Spaniards have been warring against the Muslims for almost 800 years. He wanted Christianity to be established in the lands he conquered. He encouraged the Franciscan missionaries to preach the gospel to the natives. But Cortes also believed that the Indians should themselves be conquered by force of arms. We need this to bring out the lesson that I wish to share with you in this class. Cortes offered truce to the nations of what was then called the City of Mexico. Mother Emperor, a native Indian, was persuaded by his pagan priests not to give in to the Christians. In the siege that followed, we are told that 100,000 Indians and their close allies were killed by the sword or by drowning, and as many again who died of starvation, dysentery, and other diseases. We need to bring this out. In other words, if these Indians are to be converted, it better be something different than the method used so far. Cortes made some serious blunders. He returned to Spain to defend his reputation before the Spanish crown. And so in 1527, Charles V, King of Spain, appointed the Franciscan Juan Zumarraga as bishop and protector of the Indians, and made the soldier Guzman, G-U-Z-M-A-N, governor of Mexico. And there could not have been a more stark or startling contrast. Guzman, he was a general, resented the role of the bishop. He did everything but have the bishop killed. In less than 2 years, at least 10,000 Indians have been shipped to the West Indies to be sold as slaves with no chance of returning to their families. Whole towns were laid waste. Priests were kidnapped, flogged, and maimed. These and similar atrocities, and by the way, they're publicized by every historian. They reported to the emperor in Spain, and he issued an edict, date August 1530, forbidding the enslavement of the Indians. Do you hear that? Forbidding taking any of the Indians as slaves. Not until the second half of the 19th century that America remembered about slavery. The edict read as follows. I quote, "No person shall dare to make a single Indian a slave, whether in war or in peace, whether by barter, by purchase, by trade, or on any other pretext or cause, whatever." Unquote. That's the background. When I was asked to write a series of chapters, books still to be published, on the Catholic discovery of America, the lectures were given, and this is one of those lectures. What I had in mind as I was doing the research is that I believe God wants us to reconvert our nation, and it needs massive reconversion. But then we've got to learn from what happened in the early 16th century, and as far as we can follow, shall I call it, the same policy. Thus the soil was prepared for sowing the seed of the gospel and bearing such fruit as has no parallel in the annals of Christianity. I believe America is ripe for a massive conversion. But if I mention 50 times, 51 times is not too often. We've got to live martyrs' lives, holy lives. We cannot compromise with our faith. In one short generation, the whole Aztec Empire had undergone a volcanic change. The world in which they had lived for centuries was an evil world. It was their gods demanded the killing of thousands of human beings in sacrifice. The Spanish conquistadores had delivered the Indians from pagan tyranny, but left them dangling without any religious moorings. If the Indians were to become Christians, they had to see Christianity as something belonging to them. It could not be the religion of foreigners, whom they had too often seen as invaders and oppressors. A man chosen by God to open the door to the most dramatic conversion in Christian missiology was himself a convert from paganism. Born in 1474, he lost his parents. That's Juan Diego. He lost his parents in childhood and was brought up by his uncle. And that too, by the way, a lifetime of reading the lives of the great men and women of the church's history. I know of no exceptions. Those who had achieved the most, who had reached the highest pinnacles of sanctity, had been men and women who from childhood had suffered. I hear Juan Diego, orphaned as a child. On marrying, he settled with his wife at Cuchatilan in a little one-room mud house thatched with corn stalks. Without identifying the priest, we are good friends. I will just mention the Diocese of Arlington. He thought he needed a new rectory, so he bought a new rectory. This is public knowledge. The new rectory cost the parish $450,000. You can't imagine the sermons I give when I give retreats to priests. It's a wonder anybody stays to the end of the retreat. Father, in the name of God, will you live some kind of life of poverty? In 1525, he was baptized Juan Diego, along with his wife, Maria Lucia, and his uncle Juan Bernardino. Juan Diego and his wife would frequently walk the 15 miles to Tlatelolco to assist at Mass and receive Holy Communion, and not just on Sundays, but for Mass during the week, 15 miles one way. Four years after baptism, his wife died. Oh no! He loses his parents as a child. Then his wife dies and left him childless. Juan Diego then moved to be closer to his aged uncle, whose house was only 9 miles from the nearest Franciscan church. That's saving 6 miles of walking. I have to say this. I've said it before, and I just want to repeat and underline. The Americans are living in a dream world. Dream is a word. A dream world. You're out of touch. You're out of touch with reality. Juan Diego rose early for Mass on the morning of December the 9th, 1531, which was then the feast of the Immaculate Conception. The Franciscans were unique in promoting devotion to Mary's Immaculate Conception, centuries before the definition of the dogma in 1854. On his way to Mass, Juan was suddenly stopped by the sound of music at the hill of Tepeyac, the site of the former pagan temple. He thought it was his imagination, but then saw a glowing white cloud hallowed by a rainbow formed by streams of lightning coming from the cloud. Then he heard a woman's voice gently calling out to him in diminutive form, Juanito, Juan Diegoito. So then they asked him where he was going. "I'm on my way to the church in Tlatelolco to hear Mass," he told her. The lady smiled and said, "You must know and be very certain, my son, that I am truly the perpetual and perfect Virgin Mary, Mother of the true God, through whom everything lives, who is the Creator and Master of heaven and earth. I heartily desire that a temple be built here in my name, where I will show and give all my love, my help, and my protection to the people. In order to realize my intentions, go to the house of the bishop in Mexico City. Tell him I sent you. It is my desire to have a temple built here." Juan Diego did as the lady told him, but the bishop was not impressed. He told the poor Indian to come later at a more convenient time. So Juan returned to the Tepeyac Hill the same evening. She didn't say when, but the bishop didn't say when. He figured he'd come back the same day. And the lady was waiting for him. He urged her to send someone else to the bishop. He himself, he told the lady, "I am nobody. I do not want to fall into your displeasure." But the lady insisted, "It must be Juan." And he returned to the bishop the same day. Well, how not to make friends with bishops? He pestered him. So he came back to the bishop, who this time was more impressed, but also told Juan that the lady must give some proof that she really was the Mother of God. Again at sunset on December the 10th, the next day, he went to Tepeyac, where the lady appeared to him with a promise that she would provide the miraculous sign requested by the bishop. At this point, there are two versions, and both are part of the history. One version has it that when Juan returned home, he found his uncle deathly sick. Another and fully documented version is that his uncle was missing when the nephew returned from Tepeyac Hill. He had been fatally shot by hostile Indians who resented his becoming a Christian and cooperating with the hated Spaniards. Juan Diego was in a quandary. Should he go back to the bishop as the lady had instructed him, or should he take care of his uncle? Juan chose to minister to his uncle's desperate needs all day, Monday, December the 11th. Charity comes first. Tuesday morning, December the 12th. When is the Feast of Our Lady of Guadalupe?
December 12th.
Tuesday morning, December the 12th. Juan went to get the priest to take care of his dying uncle. In his simplicity, he made a bypass around Tepeyac, hoping the lady wouldn't know. He was afraid that the lady would be waiting for him, but he did not know her. The Blessed Virgin came down the hill to intercept him on the road. She asked him, "Where are you going?" He explained about his uncle. Then she told him, "Listen, and be sure, my dear son, that I will protect you. Do not be afraid, nor grieved, and not your heart be dismayed. No matter how great the illness of your uncle, of which you speak, I am your mother. Is not my help your refuge? Am I not of your kind? That's important. The lady who appeared to him looked like and was dressed like what? An Indian. Do not be concerned about your uncle's illness. He's not going to die. Be assured he's already well. Hari then told Hemant to go to the top of the hill and find some flowers which he was to bring to her. The hill was a desert. Only cactus grew. Hemant did as he was told. When he reached the crest of the hill, it was covered with beautiful Castilian roses in full bloom. As he later related, Mary took the roses from him as they gathered them. He picked up the roses and put them in her hands and arranged them with her own hands in the cloak or tilma that Juan was wearing. Talk about simplicity. There was one final message from Mary. It was a capstone of Guadalupe and the key to understanding what we are saying when we speak of the Blessed Virgin and the discovery or conversion of America. In other words, this is the sign you must take to the Lord Bishop. Tell him in my name that with this he will see and recognize my will. He must do what I ask. You are my ambassador and worthy of my confidence. I counsel you to take every care to speak only in the presence of the bishops. Tell him that you are what you are carrying, and tell him how I asked you to climb the hill to gather the flowers. Also tell him everything you have seen so that you will persuade the bishop to see how the church I have asked for will be built. When Juan reached the bishop's residence, he was made to wait a long time, and the attendant tried to take some of the roses that were on his cloak, but the flowers became like painted embroidery. On being admitted to the bishop's presence, Diego opened his cloak. Immediately the roses fell in a flood of color to the floor. But that was not all. On the cloak was a portrait of the Mother of God. She was in Indian dress, her hands joined in prayer, her features were Indian and of startling beauty. My friends, you have no idea what's going through my mind as I read this. I say to myself, Hardin, is it really you? It can't be. I know of no Jesuit who was a worse skeptic than a queer individual called Hardin. The last thing I would ever dream of writing about, oh no, the Blessed Virgin appearing and roses, oh no. But I thought I would mention this and then see what happens. Did we, in any of our classes, either last semester or this semester, did any of you get enrolled in the confraternity of the Miraculous Medal?
Yes.
Oh, you did? Then we're safe. Anybody here not be enrolled in the confraternity of the Miraculous Medal? Anybody not? Oh. Well, we'll have to find. I've got a book. We have to find the medals. We just have to find the medals. Please? Well, that's to be enrolled in the confraternity. Now, I'll ask once more. How many of you have not been enrolled in the confraternity of the Miraculous Medal? Okay. Well, then, what we should do, I think, is. Do you have enough medals to go around? If those who have medals and have been enrolled can lend their medals, see, it's for the ritual. So what I will do, after a few minutes, I can bless the medals and have you people enrolled in the confraternity, then you can return the medals. Is that safe? All I can tell you is, there is no worse skeptic I've ever known than Father Hardin. You're talking about medals and Juan Diego. Oh, no. All I can tell you, I have been converted. Bishop Zavaga fell on his knees in prayer. Juan Diego was allowed to retire to a hermitage. He died there in 1548 at the age of 74, and he was beatified by Pope John Paul II. Since 1531, the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe has become, as I'm sure you know, a major basilica. How many of you have been to the Basilica of Our Lady in Mexico City? We might see that Mexico City is built around the shrine. The principal wonder of Guadalupe, however, is not the unexplainable picture of Our Lady. It is not the constant stream of pilgrims to the shrine every year. The real wonder and the main theme of this lecture is the avalanche of conversions which the revelation to Juan Diego began in the Western world. One historian after another is lost for words to do justice to the phenomenon. In sober fact, it is unprecedented in the 20 centuries of Catholic evangelization. No one questions the heroism of the pioneers of Christianity who discover the New World. But what I want to bring out, and with this we'll close the lecture, scarcely this is a non-Catholic historian. Scarcely had the Most Holy Virgin of Guadalupe appeared and taken possession of her inheritance when the Catholic faith spread with the rapidity of light from the rising sun to the wide extent and beyond the bounds of the ancient empire of Mexico. Countless multitudes from every tribe, every district, every race, who are grossly superstitious, ruled by the instincts of cruelty, oppressed by every form of violence, and utterly degraded, radically changed once they learned about the marvelous apparition of Our Lady of Guadalupe. These pagans, we are told, could not resist the loving invitation of the Mother of God. They flocked in droves to the waters of baptism on a scale and with a speed that is no equal in recorded Catholic history. And the more paganized our own nation becomes, and it is very, very pagan, the more we should look for a miracle. We've got to do our part. The missionaries were understandably overwhelmed by the endless crowds who clamored for instruction and baptism. We have evidence of a single priest administering the sacrament of baptism to 6,000 people in a single day. Whenever the missionaries traveled, an entire family would come running out of their poor villages. Begging with signs to have the waters of baptism poured on them. Along with baptism, the natives were instructed in the basics of Christianity. Nor was that all. Soon churches, monasteries, convents, hospitals, schools, and workshops were built to provide for the development and practice of the Catholic faith.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over and play side two.